Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we, as usual, unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. This week, we start by talking about money in our politics, more specifically, the High Court's decision to keep sealed the CR17 funding details, which was, of course, the funding that was for Cyril Ramaphosa's campaign for the ANC presidency way back in 2017. We ask, what is the decision's impact on transparency and accountability, as well as the role of money in our politics? After that, we'll try and make sense of the apparent broken telephone in the government's security cluster in the wake of last week's rioting in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng.
This aircon is racist.
I've never, ever been a spy.
Can the DBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
Order!
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shape.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come in?
Let's welcome now our guests for this week's conversation, Dr. Stanbile Mbete, who teaches politics at the University of Pretoria, Frin Repkin, the Sunday Times legal correspondent, as well, of course, as Sibongakonke Shoba, who's the Sunday Times politics editor, a regular visitor on the show. Welcome to all of you. Frin, let us start with you. What are the issues that were before the court this week, and who were the parties?
So what happened was, if you recall, when the public protector released her report into the CR17 campaign, she revealed that during the course of her investigation into the donation made by Gavin Watson of AGO or Busasa, during the course of that investigation, she acquired from the Financial Intelligence Center the bank statements or the banking records of the whole of the CR17 campaign over the course of some months. And she revealed when she released her report that millions of rands had been raised for that campaign. And the precise number of millions was disputed, but it was a lot of money. And she said that there was the risk of some sort of state capture on the part of the donors. And she said that the speaker should require that the identities of those donors and the amounts that they had donated should be disclosed. That was one of the remedial actions that she directed in her report. She also said that there was a prima facie case of money laundering that the NPA should investigate, amongst a number of other findings. Now, of course, that was a very explosive finding, and the president challenged it in court. He won in the High Court. That then went to the Constitutional Court. And while the Constitutional Court's judgment was pending, what then happened was that the EFF, which was a party to the case in the High Court, launched a separate case wanting access to those financial records. So what happens, just to explain, Bramank, is that when you go to court, when you challenge something in court, the decision maker whose decision you're challenging, in this case, the public protector, has to put a record of her decision before the court. That means all the documents upon which her decision was based. So the public protector said, fine, and she took all the documents, including these bank statements that she had gotten from the Financial Intelligence Center, which were supposed to be confidential according to the Financial Intelligence Center, and put them in court. Now, court documents are public documents normally. So then the president's lawyers asked the DJP to put them in a sealed envelope, which he did. And he said, if anyone has a problem with that, they can raise it in court. The matter goes to court. They fight in court. Judgment comes out. The public protector loses. It goes on appeal to the Constitutional Court. Then after that, the EFF says, no, we want that envelope. We want those documents. And they launch a separate court case asking the court to publicly release, or what they called, unseal that record. That was the judgment that came out this week, where the High Court then said, no, you can't have them.
Very, very, very important. Just laying, you know, the ground for our conversation. The EFF's particular interest in the matter, what would it be, Dr. Mbete? Because these are two separate political parties. The funding relates to a supposedly rival political party. So why would they be so keen to know what, you know, a candidate in a rival political party, how much money or where the money would have come from?
Well, for the EFF, what they say is that their interest in the CR17 funding records is that they want to know if there is anyone who could have undue influence over the president and have the possibility or the ability to influence decisions in the form of state capture in the way as we saw under former President Zuma and with the Guptas. And so the EFF have said that that is their primary interest in the unsealing of those records, because they say that it is important for accountability and for transparency. Indeed, the EFF claims, and they claimed in their court papers, that one of their own members, one of their own parliamentarians, received assistance from President Ramaphosa that was drawn from those CR17 funds. And so they argue that it is in the public interest for the donors to that fund to be disclosed in order to effectively protect South Africa's democracy and its politics. Of course, we know that the bigger political game, I think, for the EFF is to try to show that the administration of President Ramaphosa is not that different from that of former President Zuma, and that this would certainly play into the EFF's hands in terms of weakening or being able to make a case to weaken the ANC.
The question of money in our political system, that doesn't only apply to the ANC, does it? For example, the EFF itself, you know, would be raising money from somewhere, you know, and all the other political parties, whether it's a DA or in any of the many political parties that we have. What is the money used for? Let's just reduce it to the CR17 campaign or the ANC campaigning process, because we were talking about millions and millions, apparently. What is the money used for?
Well, Mike, as a veteran of covering party conferences, especially ANC conferences, a lot of money is used, Bramai, to run campaigns for whatever position you want to occupy within the ANC. So there will be money that will be used from the stages of campaigning when certain leaders need to move around. They move around different different parts of the country. They need flights, they need car hire, they need accommodation, and when they get there, you need a venue, you hire a hall or a stadium, or you have it in an open area, which would won't cost you anything. So there's a lot that goes in. Then you have to transport these people that you want to address and influence. So if you are having an event in Johannesburg, you transport people from Alex, from Soweto, you hire buses, and a lot of money goes into that. And that also goes until the time of conference. So what usually happens in ANC conference, especially, I'm not familiar with the DA or how they conduct their conference, but with the ANC, the people who are contesting and their lobbyists keep a very close eye on their delegates. That is why you would find that the ANC would arrange some kind of accommodation for its delegates who are going to come to the conference, but you'll find that different factions will accommodate their own delegates. So that's why there was talk that there was accommodation that was booked somewhere, but some delegates end up sleeping somewhere in Sentin. It's because lobbyists keep a close eye on their delegates. They make sure that the delegate has eaten. If the delegate smoke, they make sure that the delegate has a cigarette. If the delegate drinks alcohol, they make sure that there's enough alcohol so the delegate does not move around and influenced by other people. So those are the kind of monies those are the kind of things that these monies are used for. Of course, the allegations that delegates are then bought during these conferences, which is something that no one can actually prove right now. But running a campaign to contest for an ANC position requires a lot of money, as I've just stated.
But should not elections, especially electing leaders who are likely to, you know, whether they're in the ANC or anywhere else, who are likely to influence the direction of the country, should those the determining factor not be the policies and the values, etc., as opposed to whether you've got money in your, how deep your pockets are.
Unfortunately, Pranak, it doesn't work like that. But you still find different factions using different policy stances as a campaign tool. But not everyone who's campaigning around whatever policy stance actually believes in that policy stance. It has been proven for over the years. If you remember, Pramaik, many of those people who are now in the RET faction that is led by their father, they call him the father of RET, former President Jacob Zuma, were opposed to these radical positions as far back as 2010. When the Youth League, which was then led by Julius Malema, was pushing for the same policies. And now that he is now out of power, you find people around him claiming that this is what he stands for, which is something that he had opposed in the past, which tells you that it's really not about these policies. They just use such policy stances as a campaign tool. And then comes the issue of money, as I outlined, Bramike, that You really can't run a campaign without money. It's almost impossible. I've had ridiculous figures being thrown around, campaigns of ANC leaders whose campaigns were not even visible, and you are told that these people spent millions of rands, and you wonder, where was this campaign? It's really because a lot of money is required when you need to run such campaigns, and then you can choose whatever policy stance that is fashionable during that period, and you become populist, and you use that, and you win your conference.
Franny, just before we go off the court process itself, we're talking here about money versus policy and values. Did this come up as a factor at all when the court was considering the matter?
There's two separate court cases. One of them was the one with the judgment that came out this week, which is apparently still ongoing because it's being taken on appeal. The other interesting one which is finished in a way because the Constitutional Court has finally decided it. But one thing that the Constitutional Court left open, which is now going back to the High Court, is whether the Executive Ethics Code is constitutional. There was an argument made by friend of the court, Amma Bongani, that if the court should find that the Executive Ethics Code does not require the disclosure of internal political fundraising donations, in other words, when people are fundraising inside their party, they should be required to disclose those donations under the Executive Ethics Code. And if they're not required to at present, then that means the code is unconstitutional. That was the argument that Amma Bongani was making. They didn't care about the fight between the public protector and the president, but they came in on this point of principle. Now, when that was in the High Court decided that they didn't want to decide that issue. They said it was a very important issue, but they weren't deciding it on some technical grounds. And when it went to the Constitutional Court said, should have been decided in the High Court, and they sent it back to the High Court. So that is now going back to the High Court and should be heard in September. And there we are now going to see a debate about what the scope of the Executive Ethics Code should be as far as the disclosure of donations. Should it only be... So we know that the Executive Ethics Code, for example, if you get gifts, you have to disclose them if you're a minister. And Amma Bongani is saying, well, you should also have to disclose if you're campaigning inside your political party and you're a minister, you should also have to disclose those donations. So that's going to be an interesting one to see how that pans out. But it's still to be argued before court.
Okay. Dr. Mbete, last word goes to you on this issue. Why should South Africans care actually about this court case, because it seems to be a fight between vested interests, whether it's the EFF or Amma Bongani, but it doesn't seem to be an issue of broader interest among South Africans. Why should we care about the court case?
Well, the reason we should care is because of the very close relationship between financial interests and democratic politics. And indeed, one of the argument that the EFF made in its case was that in order to be able to, Section 19 of the Constitution protects our political rights, and they argued that in order for a citizen to be able to make their political choices freely, then they need to know as much as possible about those political parties, and they should know who the donors of those political parties are, and even individual leaders within those political parties. And so the way in which that has been solved to some degree in the level of political parties is with the passing of the Political Party Funding Act, which came into operation on the 1st of April of this year. And what that does is that it sets requirements for political parties to disclose their donors above a particular threshold, as well as providing for public funding to political parties. But the issue around internal party contests is still unresolved, because there may be limits on private funding of political parties broadly. There is no regulation or requirement of transparency with regards to internal party contests, and that's what's at issue here. And what's really important about it for the general public is that, you know, if we know who our political leaders are taking money from, and how much money they are taking from those people, then it provides us with a sense of where those political leaders could be influenced, and what some of their weaknesses or vulnerabilities may be. And it contributes to the ability for us to hold those leaders to account and to exercise greater vigilance over the policy processes of government. So it does matter for us to know who funds not only our political parties, but individual politicians as well.
Okay, let's go to the other big issue, you know, politically of the week. The apparent disagreement in cabinet in characterizing the violence that happened over the last week in Gauteng and in KwaZulu-Natal, on whether we were faced with an insurrection, a counter-revolution, or just plain thuggery. Smaoke, what would you say we've just experienced? Is it one of the above, or all three, or some of it?
Pramaik, if the ministers don't know what it was, Pramaik, how do you expect an ordinary South African like myself to know what it was? But what I can say, Pramaik, is that we are in this situation precisely because of the left hand has no idea what the right hand is doing. We are in this mess because we have incompetent people occupying very crucial positions in this country. And really, if President Cyril Ramaphosa does not make changes in his cabinet in the coming days or weeks, then we'll reach a conclusion that he is not better than the previous regime. The public spat from the second place between the ministers in the security cluster really tells you that there is no way that they could have stopped what happened, because they have no clue. They are just like me and you sitting here. The Minister of State Security says, I had the information, I sent it. Did she courier it? Did she send an SMS? Did she WhatsApp? Did she email? Did she send it via the post office? Who knows? Did Peggy try to get it? And if he did, what did he do? He claims he didn't get it. So we are just in a mess. I can't really find words to define what we are going through as a country, really, unless there is some kind of urgent intervention in terms of the president taking action. Because it seems as if these divisions, Pramaik, even in cabinet, they seem to be aligned, the pre-Nasrec factions, and it seems as if the Nasrec hangover even exists within the President Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet. And if he doesn't take action and make changes, or I don't know, crack the whip or something like that, then we are in for even bigger crisis in the future. Can you imagine, Pramaik, if we're under attack from outside forces, what would have happened? And would you still be having this conversation with me?
Dr. Mbete, Mwangonge is mentioning the possibility or the need probably of a cabinet reshuffle. If you were president, is that what you would be doing now, or would you wait?
Look, if I was the president, I certainly would be doing a cabinet reshuffle now in order to consolidate control over the cabinet, especially given the ministers who have shown themselves to be not up to the task of doing their work. But I do think that there's something a bit more fundamental that is at issue here, which is that all of the ministers that you mentioned sit on the National Joint Operational and Intelligence Structure, which was meeting every day from the mandate that the president spoke to the country about the events in KwaZulu-Natal the previous weekend. So these are all people that are ostensibly sitting in the same meeting room every day and that are meant to have a joint communication strategy and that are meant to have the same story. And so what this indicates is that some of those basic processes of government are not working the way that they should be working. And the individuals that should be able to exercise some oversight and some control over the communications of the different departments that are part of the NAT joint structure just aren't properly functioning. And it won't really matter who you put in place in those different cabinet positions if there is no functional processes for how to manage something of this kind. And so, yes, I think that President Ramaphosa should be reshuffling his cabinet. There are many people in that cabinet that shouldn't be there, but he also needs to be having a bigger conversation about how the structures of his government and of his cabinet are actually operating.
And in the reshuffle, what should he be looking for? Competency or political loyalty?
Competence. At this stage, political loyalty isn't going to save him as president of South Africa, because it's not clear that there'll be an ANC or a South Africa left at the end of all of this. And so for his own credibility and for the credibility of his political project, then he should be looking to put the right people into the right jobs. One of the things that we are dealing with as a country is the complete deinstitutionalization of different parts of the state. Our basic parts of the administration just aren't functioning anymore. And he needs to be putting in place leaders who will be able to oversee the rebuilding of institutional capacity in the South African state, because none of the reforms that he wants to implement are possible without that.
Very, very briefly, when you go to bed at night right now, given everything that has happened, like we've been talking about, would you be comfortable falling asleep on the assumption that government is on top of the security situation?
No. I don't think government is on top of the security situation, and our security cluster has been found wanting, very seriously wanting, in the past few weeks. And that doesn't leave a great deal of confidence for the security of the nation, of national security, or indeed of the security of individual citizens within the borders of South Africa, or anyone who's within the borders of South Africa. And so, and if I was the president, this would keep me up at night.
Sponge, any chance that the situation that's just been described by Dr. Mbete can be turned around or will be turned around soon?
I was chuckling when Dr. Mbete mentioned the need to appoint competent people. because, Brad Mike, have you looked at that NEC of the ANC? Because that's the pool that presidents over the years have chosen their ministers. The word competence, and that NEC can't be mentioned in the same sentence. It's packed with people that we know who have a track record of incompetence. The president is in a very difficult position, Pramek, because he leads a party that has allowed a situation where the incompetent people are able to rise up its ranks. It's precisely because it is the incompetent people who are unethical and who are able to manipulate processes. It goes back to the point we're talking about, the issue of money. Ethical leaders, Pramak, good citizens, will not want to rise up or seek a position by abusing state resources, stealing money from the state in order for them to fund their campaigns and then for them to be elected. That is why ethical leaders within the ANC are being chucked out of the system precisely because they are unable to participate in whatever is going on. So President Ramaphosa now sits with the headache of going back to his NEC and looking for competent people. I wish him luck, Brahman.
Okay, folks, don't we all? Don't we all wish him luck at this point? And unfortunately, that's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. And I'd like to thank our guests for this week's conversation, Dr. Stanbile Mbete, who teaches politics at the University of Pretoria, Frenny Repkin, Sunday Times legal correspondent, as well as Sibonga Gonke-Shoba, who's the Sunday Times politics editor. And by the way, you can find a podcast of this conversation on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to source your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. Mike Siluma signing off.